Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
For Inside Carolina, this is Taylor Viplis, and from the Inside the Film Room podcast, we've got a couple of my fellow Tar Heel football lettermen with me. It's Zach Goins and Jake Lawler. Guys, with everyone staying home currently, I thought this would be the perfect opportunity to bring us together so we can try and help people find what to watch to pass by the time. But first, you know, what have you guys both been up to during these unprecedented times, and where are you presently?
Yeah, so first, I just wanted to thank you for having us on the show. It's good to have it, and I think it is going to be a good episode. I guess kind of for me personally, I've been splitting time between Charlotte and Chapel Hill, and really just since I've gotten back from L.A., I've really kind of been writing some of my own stuff as well as watching quite a bit, and I've been trying to stay busy as possible, doing like prison workouts, push-ups and sit-ups. But I was actually doing curls with our like dining bench. So, you know, just any way to get right.
That's impressive, Jake. Again, Vip, thanks for having us on here. I'm here in Charlotte, so on my work from home life, that's pretty much all I've been doing. Just sit in the corner at my desk for like 8 or 9 hours a day, working, get some walks outside, doing a couple workouts, and then, of course, just streaming, watching movies, TV shows, new series, Tiger King, of course, pretty much everything everybody else has been keeping up with, trying to stay busy.
Now, obviously, everyone's health and well-being is the first and really only priority, but personally, how has it affected you guys both as moviegoers?
Right. I mean, that's something huge because for those of you that don't know, our podcast is a movie review podcast. So we're pretty much every week going to see something new, going to see maybe two or three different things and then reviewing it on our podcast. So beyond just the podcast, though, like in daily life, going to see movies, that's something that we all like to do. And it's really, really shortened my list so far this year. I'm only at 12 movies this year. And I think last year I was probably at like 25 by this point. So it's devastating, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I mean, look, ultimately, you know, film and television and the production of both really is kind of like relatively low on the list of important things at the moment. But I do think that it kind of alleviates a lot of stress for people that are kind of fortunate enough to be able to stay at home without having to go back into work. I do think that it kind of helps a lot to get us out. And I know that for me, I loved going to a theater. I mean, you know, that was just what I did. It was cathartic. I would go alone. I would go with people. It really didn't matter, but it always been sort of like a safe haven for me. So it's not necessarily like completely detrimental, but it is disappointing.
Now, some movies barely had any time in the theater before going straight to streaming, movies like The Way Back, The Invisible Man, The Hunt. Now, upcoming releases, they're getting pushed back. How do you think this will affect the movie industry going forward?
You know, there's a lot of people that say that like this is the new normal, that films will get pushed to streaming services. And I really don't think that's the case. I mean, I think that despite the fact that there's millions and millions and millions of dollars out on the table for having movies in theaters, especially for huge IPs that we've seen that have been pushed back, I think that when theaters do open back up, I mean, regardless if it's, you know, Wonder Woman 84 or if it's, you know, just any, you know, any big IP like that, or if it's a small movie, I think that, you know, a lot of people are going to want something to do. I mean, you know, there's people that never went out to eat that are now wishing that they could go out to eat. And I think that movies are relatively the same way. So I think that once, everyone starts getting healthier and more safe and more comfortable with opening the theaters back up, I think we're going to see a huge increase in ticket purchases for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think Jake and I talked about it last week, saying that like it's going to be a celebration when people finally go back to movies. The people that used to complain about, oh, I don't want to go see that, I wish I could just watch it at home, now that they've been watching stuff at home for such a long time, they're going to be itching to get back in the theater. So I agree with that. I think that it's not going to really affect the future of movies going forward.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem for me with the movies getting released straight to streaming platforms is, you know, they're charging like $20, and I understand
it's ridiculous.
I understand why they're doing that, but for me, and I'm assuming you guys have it, just with how much you guys go to the movie, I have AMC A-List where I pay, I think it's like $20 yeah. a month, where I get to see up to 3 movies a week. So there's zero chance I'm paying $20. I don't care if, you know, somebody comes out and says this is the greatest movie ever. $20 a movie compared to when I was watching A-List for $20 an entire month, where I could see up to, you know, like 12 movies. It's almost uncomparable.
Right. I'm in the same boat. I'm also an A-List member, and I got excited at first when they announced this, because I was like, okay, $20, not bad, because I thought you were purchasing the movie. But it's like, it's $19.99 to rent for most of these things, and you get it for a 48-hour window. So, I mean, maybe if it was like, we know Black Widow got pushed back, but if it was a movie of like that caliber, then I might consider it. But like, I'm not going to pay $20 to rent The Hunt or some like B-list movie that's out right now. So unfortunately, I'm not really on that train.
Yeah. I mean, I think that really just the sheer cost that we're seeing about how expensive they're making these things just kind of alludes to the fact that they are losing money by not having stuff in the theater, which again sort of emphasizes our point that when theaters do open back up, they will be filled for the most part, regardless of what movie it is, just because of, you know, just the sheer freedom of being able to choose.
All right. Before we get into what people could be watching now that they're at home, I just wanted to take a quick break here so I can remind everyone about Johnny T-Shirt. As a local small business in Chapel Hill, Johnny T-Shirt needs your support now more than ever. Whatever you could want as a Carolina fan when it comes to Tar Heel apparel, Johnny T-Shirt has got you covered. They are running some great sales currently online at johnnytshirt.com, so you could get what you want at the best price possible. On the off chance you don't need any Carolina gear right now, you could go online and buy a gift card from them, because we all know Tar Heel fans, best fans in the world, are going to want more gear at some point in the near future. And don't forget, Inside Carolina premium subscribers save 10% off their orders. Okay, guys, now let's get back to business. People are looking for movies to watch. Collectively, we've seen a lot of movies over the past year. So I'm going to go through a list of movies that we've all seen, so we could kind of, without spoiling the movies, give people our opinions on them. And, you know, I want to start with a movie dear to Zach's heart. Sometimes I think they're paying him for how much he promotes this movie. Zach, what do you think about Booksmart?
Oh man, I knew it was coming right when you said that. This was my favorite movie of 2019. I saw 75 movies last year, and this is number one, and it held that spot for a long time because it came out in May, I believe, and didn't get dethroned the entire rest of the year. But this is, if you like Superbad, that's like a classic high school party movie, coming of age movie. This is like the 2019 reincarnated version of it. It's updated to fit the times. You've got two fantastic female leads, Olivia Wilde, directorial debut. I just don't even get me started, Vip. You don't want the whole spiel here.
Jake, now, do you agree with that review, or are you kind of sick of hearing how much Zach talks about Booksmart?
No, I mean, you know, I think that Zach knows that I'm definitely in the Booksmart boat. I love it. I mean, I think it's a phenomenal debut. It's two kind of wonderful performances, as he said, and it is a terrific film. And it was definitely one of the strongest films of the first half of 2019. So I was thankful that I got to see it, and I'm glad Zach likes it so much, because he actually reminded me to rewatch it a few weeks ago, and it definitely holds up. So,
that's a movie that I definitely still have to rewatch. I loved it the first time I saw it in the theater. I thought, you know, there were so many just laugh out loud, funny moments. So that's a movie we're all recommending. Booksmart, probably one of the top movies we're recommending, especially when you consider how much Goins is shifting the balance.
Exactly. And it's on Hulu. It's on Hulu. So you can watch it if you have that. You can stream it for free.
The next movie I wanted to go to, Jake, you could start us here, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. It really kind of, for Tarantino, I think it vacillates between Pulp Fiction and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for my top films that he's ever made. And I felt that way immediately walking out of the theater. I mean, I think that it is the ultimate hangout movie, which is really cool considering that Tarantino coined that term. And it's great. It's, you know, it's Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio. It's really kind of a love letter to the old Hollywood, as well as examining some of the anxieties about new Hollywood as well. It's utterly fantastic. It was definitely one of my favorite films of the year.
I'm with Jake on that one. I mean, we probably talk about it on our podcast, maybe every other episode, about the Leonardo DiCaprio scene in the trailer where after he like flubbed up his lines and he's just having the mental breakdown. It's like one of my favorite scenes of all of last year. But yeah, I agree. I hadn't seen, when this came out over the summer, I'd only seen one Tarantino movie. That was like a big blind spot in my like movie history. So since I first saw it, I've gone back and watched like five or six other ones and then rewatched this, and I appreciate it even more. But I totally agree that that's definitely, and it'll give you, it's like 3 hours, a little more than three hours, maybe something like that. So it'll definitely give you plenty of time. It'll pass plenty of time.
Yeah, I think it's like 2 hours, somewhere 2.5 hours, somewhere in the 2.5-3 hour window. So normally that could be something that, you know, steers people away from the movie. But I think in a situation like this, and it's a movie that I think it takes a while to kind of get building, but that last like 30 or so minutes, it was like some of the best viewing I've ever seen in a movie theater. And then of course you get Leo, Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie. It's a star-studded cast. So that's another movie I think we're all putting in you have to check it out if you haven't seen it yet. Going to flipping the script kind of completely, you get a movie like Parasite. Zach, what'd you think about that?
That was another one that is obviously the best picture winner. It was a big upset at the Oscars. There was a quote that the director Bong Joon-ho had said at the Golden Globes about like, once you overcome the one inch barrier of subtitles, you'll be exposed to so many more movies. And I think that that's a great message for anyone who's resisting watching this because it's a Korean film. It's in Korean. So you have to read, but I mean, it's incredible. It's one of the best, I don't know. Booksmart has that personal connection to me, but I mean, this is just like technically, narratively, everything all put together is like definitely the best overall movie from last year. And that's why it was honored as such. But I mean, I think Jake is better to speak on this one than I am though.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a rare thing. It's a rare and it's a wonderful thing when the actual Best Picture wins the Best Picture Award. And, you know, Parasite's success at the Oscars was monumental. But I think that really it was my best film of the year. It was my favorite film of the year. And after I saw it the second time, it like instantly landed and like my top five favorite movies of the decade, and as well as like mixing in the list of the all-timers as well. I mean, I've been following Bong for quite a while. I mean, you know, Memories of Murder, The Host, Okja, just Snowpiercer. I mean, he's made some incredible things before, but I think that in my mind, Parasite is his magnum opus for so many reasons that kind of Zach talked about. I mean, you know, the acting and the ensemble won Best Acting Ensemble at the SAG Awards, which was well deserved because they're all brilliant. I mean, technically it was stunning. I think the script was razor sharp. They played with a lot of different thematic elements that are really tough to talk about. And they did it in such a way that was kind of noticeable, but not overt. I mean, Parasite is easily one of the greatest films of the past 20 years. And it's, I was, you know, I think I was blown away the first time I saw it, and I just continued to watch it again, kind of really just to study how good it was.
It's another one also that, like, I feel like the less you know about it going in, the better.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, Vip, but Jake and I have had this discussion of, like, I didn't really know anything going in. And so the first half, it's like this fun family comedy kind of thing. And then at the midway point, it just twists and it's a completely different movie. And it was like the most unexpected but delightful, like, transition.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think one of the, going back to your subtitles point, one of the main reasons why I like going to the movie theaters, it's kind of like a way to just kind of get away from the outside world. And when I'm at home trying to watch movies, you know, there's a lot of outside things that can kind of distract me. So when I watched Parasite and I saw the subtitles, my first thought was, you know, oh, I'm going to have to read for a couple of hours. But then, like, the more I got into it, like, the subtitles kept me focused in on the movie, to which, like, you know, that's kind of like the theater experience that you're supposed to have. So I think if you go in with the thought, like, subtitles are going to be, you know, annoying to read, I think it's a good kind of change of pace from what we're normally accustomed to, in a situation where you kind of just immerse yourself in the theater experience.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
All right. So I think that's another movie we're all recommending. This is a movie that I've seen kind of split reviews on. But what did you guys think about Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems?
Whew. Let's go. I know that's probably bad audio there, just screaming into the microphone, but that's, I think that's pretty accurate for what Uncut Gems is. I mean, it's like an hour and a half, 2 hours of just chaotic, ridiculous shouting and nonstop action. And, oh man. It's a doozy, and it's not your typical Adam Sandler.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for Zach definitely said it with, it definitely isn't your kind of typical Adam Sandler. I think that, but it was also in one of my favorite films of the year, and I love it for so many different reasons. I think the chaos works so perfectly with it. The Safdies who directed it have always done, like, an incredible job of kind of creating their own world and their own unique way of filmmaking. Their kind of breakout film was Good Time with Robert Pattinson, which is also excellent, but, you know, Heaven Knows What is also a film they made back in 2014, which is also just incredible. But I do think that this is their strongest work yet. It is one of those films that, like, if you don't know what to expect, then you might be kind of a little bit turned off by it, because it is something that is new and it's something that's a little bit hard to follow. But, you know, I was fully invested in it, and it is kind of like nerve wracking up until the very last minute. And it's phenomenal. So I'm definitely recommending that as well.
As a New Yorker, how did you feel about that, Vib?
His New York's kind of personality.
Yeah, just like the hustle and bustle.
The sleazy,
like,
yeah. Everybody in New York is sleazy. They all have those small kind of stores. They all have got their side hustles going on. And I think sports fans will kind of like it or gravitate towards it, because you do get a look into the sports type, the sports betting type world. But, you know, I went to this movie with my girlfriend, who also has AMC A-List, and she was not a fan of it, kind of going off Jake's point, you know, where things are just happening randomly. What would you guys say to the people, you know, who don't like the messiness of it, and just how would you get them to try to just kind of embrace the chaos of it?
I mean, I think it's definitely not for everyone. It's the way that Howard Ratner's persona is, like, everything about the film reflects that, and it kind of just drags you in. You're not on the outside looking in, but you're like a part of that messiness.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. It's really one of those things where you're either going to like it or you're not. I mean, I think that the only kind of way that you could articulate it in a way that may would facilitate a rewatch would just be, because I think for me personally, it's like when you watch like films, like heist films or crime films, especially in the past 20 or 25 years or so, It's really about the glitz and the glamour and kind of like the everything that comes with being like a smart and fancy criminal. And this is like the complete opposite of that. So it's like a real kind of visceral and engaging look at what happens to people that, you know, ruin their lives because they do a lot of bad stuff. And I think that it's something that I had never seen before, at least to the extent that was shown in Uncut Gems. And I think, I mean, you know, at that point, it's you're just kind of like preaching to the choir. I think it really is one of those films that's just going to be polarizing because of what it is. And, you know, some people love it like we do and some people don't.
Who knew KG was that good?
Oh, he's excellent. Yeah.
Moving on to the next movie, comedies are far and away my favorite type of movies. And I think Seth Rogen had a great one in Long Shot. Zach, what were your kind of thoughts on Long Shot?
That was definitely, I'm with you there. That was one of the ones that I think didn't get appreciated enough last year. It came out like late spring, early summer, and kind of just got lost in the shuffle. But yeah, this was it was so funny. It's got Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron as the kind of like the mismatched duo, star-crossed lovers kind of thing. And it was so funny. This was right up there with Booksmart as one of my favorite comedies. And I really think that hopefully in this time where everyone's locked up and doesn't have anything better to do, that more people will get exposed to this.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely one of the pleasant surprises for me as well. It was great. You know, they were both great in it, Rogan and Theron. And it's just wonderful. It's like it's one of those films where I wasn't really expecting anything going in, and then to come out kind of thoroughly enjoyed. Because I think Zach is right. It was a shame that a lot of people didn't see it, because it really was quite good. And it wasn't just like a funny film. I mean, it had a lot to say too, which is always really good. And O'Shea Jackson, Ice Cube's son, was in it, who also kind of stole the show in basically every scene he was in.
He's like, what does he say? He's like, I'm a man of the G-O-D and the G-O-P, baby.
Sticking with the comedies, you get a movie now that Seth Rogen produced, Good Boys. What'd you guys think about that?
I thought it was good. I mean, I thought it was fine. I do think that if you want to go with comedies, the Long Shot and Booksmart are definitely better in terms of quality, but I think that it does have a lot of endearing qualities about it to make it kind of watchable.
Yeah, I feel like for some people that made the comparison saying that Booksmart was super bad with women, now Good Boys is super bad with middle schoolers. It's the same kind of like hysterical, over the top party story where it's like these misfits in middle school are trying to get to a party and there's something that's stopping them. And so it's the same concept, but this is just, it makes it funnier, I think, because of the fact that they're 11, 12 years old and they're just completely oblivious to everything they're talking about. And I thought it was really funny, but again, I mean, it's kind of that like turn your brain off kind of comedy that you don't really have to pay much attention to. But I mean, that's kind of what you need at this point when we're all locked down.
Superbad, whenever you compare a movie to Superbad with something else, like Superbad with girls, Superbad with middle school kids, it's just a formula that I think is going to work with the success of Superbad. But switching to the action genre, this is a series that I've never watched, but Jake, why would you recommend somebody getting started in the John Wick universe?
Where do I begin? I mean, I think that the John Wick universe is something that I kind of hold near and dear to my heart. I think the world is so unique and it's so special because it's something that I had never seen before, except anything except for Bullet, which is like an old 1968 film. But it's like an antiseptic world. It's like everything is kind of clean and dry, and everyone in there was born with, you know, intelligence, sarcasm, anger, and wit, or a combination of all four. And you know, it's some of the best action that I've ever seen. I mean, it comes from Chad Stahelski, who's a stunt coordinator on The Matrix. So, you know, he's done a lot of things since then, and he's got a lot of experience. And it's just some of the craziest action sequences I've ever seen. I think Keanu Reeves is stellar as the kind of the titular role, and each one it just gets crazier and crazier, and each one is different in its own wonderful and exciting and violent way. And the third one came out in 2019, and they're working on the fourth one right now, and I just can't wait to see it.
Yeah, this is one where I was kind of like you, Vip. I hadn't seen it. I hadn't seen any of the movies, and then I knew this one was coming out, and so I binged the first two like the week before to get prepped, and it was really enjoyable. I mean, I think that the first one, you kind of get all the action, you just get adjusted to everything, and then the second and third one, it kind of works to develop the universe and build that world a little bit more. So instead of just explosions and shootouts, you're actually learning about the characters and kind of why this stuff happens. But it's a really enjoyable one, and it's just another example of like the Keanu Reeves renaissance that's been going on for the past year or two.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
I have to put that one on my list. That should knock out about 9 hours of this quarantine period. Moving away from the movies, people with all this time now at home, they're looking for shows that they can binge. What are some of your guys' personal favorites or shows that you're currently watching that you would recommend to the people? Maybe just give a short little elevator pitch for the shows that you're watching or that you hold dear to your heart.
So for me, I would say these are three that I'm currently watching. Number one is Veep on HBO Go. It's one that I think you've talked about it, but this is just like the vice president comedy with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, but it's so funny. It's so smart. Jake kind of got me hooked on it, but it's been out for a while and I'm just finally working my way through it. So I need to catch up so that I can finally talk about it with everybody else. Another one is one that's actually, I'm one of the few people that still watches live TV instead of streaming for Survivor, which every time I bring that up, people are like, Survivor's still on TV? They just sleep on it and don't understand how good it is because this season is incredible. It's got 20 previous winners on it. It's season 40 of the show. So I've been watching that and like also rewatching old seasons on Amazon Prime just to kind of get that comfort watch. And then I'm also working my way through New Girl on Netflix, which is another one that's been out for a while. And it's just kind of that quick 20-minute comedy that I can turn on and watch a couple episodes.
Yeah, and I think that for me, I've been watching the show by Alex Garland, who directed Ex Machina and Annihilation. And he also wrote and kind of ghost-directed Dread. And he wrote 28 Days Later. He kind of made his jump into TV with this show called Devs, which is like a science fiction thriller about like a kind of a tech conglomerate program. Nick Offerman is in it in a completely different role than Ron Swanson from Parks and Recreation. It's exciting. It's brilliant. I think it's very smartly written. Watchmen is another one, which is similar. Devs is on Hulu. Watchmen is only one season. I don't think that they're coming back to doing another one, which is great because it's completely self-contained. Damon Lindelof created the show. It's one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen. Kind of going along with that, the first season of Westworld, I just finished watching, which is equally as brilliant. And if you have some sort of morbid fascination with how the government and how kind of the media is handling everything in terms of the coronavirus outbreak, I think Chernobyl is a great one as well to kind of just it's not going to really do any good to help you forget what's going on, but it is quite brilliant.
Jake's shows are a lot darker than mine, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think I'm going on the lighter side. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a show that I watch live every week. You could watch it on, I think when I miss it, it's on Hulu, but it's live on NBC. I think it's one of the funniest shows that I've ever watched. The cast, I love the cast, how they all play off each other. Andy Samberg, You get his character, Jake Peralta. Charles Boyle is probably one of my favorite characters. And just seeing their dynamics and their police station is always funny to me. And then the other show that I would recommend to people is on HBO, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I know Zach just put out his Zach just put out his top HBO show lists and left out Curb Your Enthusiasm, has never seen it. I think Larry David, like if you like Seinfeld, and I think Seinfeld is one of the most highly regarded sitcoms of all time. If you like Seinfeld, which I do, I think Curb Your Enthusiasm is just a better version of Seinfeld, just because Larry David, his comedic, his timing, everything about Larry David, like I just find so funny, even when he's not really trying to be funny. So I would recommend Curb Your Enthusiasm on HBO. But, as former athletes, I thought people may want to know any sport-specific shows or movies that we would suggest to them, or ones that we're watching or we have watched. Do you guys have any of those, starting with you, Zach?
Now, I can't speak on the quality of any of these shows. I know of some sports shows, but I have not watched them myself. But I know on Netflix, Cheer is huge. The documentary about the cheerleading team. Everyone in my office at work talks about just how incredibly well made it is as a documentary. I need to catch up on it. I've got nothing but time. Then I know All American is also really big on Netflix, which is like a high school football kind of thing. But I refuse to watch that because I've seen some very cringeworthy football scenes. I don't know if you guys have seen those on Twitter.
Yeah, I can't watch All American. They're like tackling each other in 7-on-7.
Tackling in 7-on-7. Like, I was like, no. That's one of my biggest pet peeves, I would say, seeing like it's on most TV shows or movies when they try and do like a football scene or something, and it's just so bad. Like the quarterback's throwing form is awful. It just doesn't work at all. And then the other show is on Amazon Prime. It's the All or Nothing documentary series. I watched last season because it was the Panthers. Obviously, that's my team. So I was very into that. This season just recently came out in February, I want to say, and it was with the Eagles. So I know previously maybe there could be some Mac Hollins action on there before he got traded, but I don't know. Maybe, Vip, you'll have to check that one out for us.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely will.
I really don't watch any sports stuff outside of, the sports I do. I think that's just kind of something weird with me. Like I watch, the games, of course, but nothing really sports related in terms of fictional entertainment. I actually just rewatched Rocky for a few weeks ago, and it is, everyone has seen it at this point, but if you haven't seen it, I would definitely check it out because it is just a phenomenal film.
Now, I love sports documentaries. Like if you put out a sports documentary and give us a behind the scenes type of look into a program or a team, like I'm always going to watch that. So the two that I have to suggest to people, I'm also a big soccer fan. So that is also another thing. Even if you don't like soccer, I think just the dynamics between the teams is enough to kind of get people interested. On Amazon Prime, there's one called Take Us Home, Leeds United. And the whole thing is they're in the championship, which is below the Premier League. And they're a team that used to be really good and they're trying to get back to the Premier League. And they brought in a new manager, they brought in new players. So the season is just following them in the championship, trying to get back up to the Premier League, which is interesting just because of the financial implications that a team has when they're trying to get into the Premier League. Because if a team goes for broke trying to get in the Premier League and they don't get it, the TV deal monies are way lower, and it could bankrupt teams and send you down even further. And then the other one, it's another soccer documentary. It's called Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix. And it's the best way I could describe it. This is kind of, you can't really spoil it because like these seasons have already happened and people already know what's going on. But the best way I could describe it is if you imagine the Premier League as the MLB, the championship as AAA baseball, and the League One as like AA baseball, and the top teams from AAA are getting promoted to the MLB. The worst teams from that MLB are getting sent down to AAA. So Sunderland was this team that was always in the Premier League, and they get sent down to the championship, and the Netflix comes in and they're like, we want to do a documentary on you getting back up to the Premier League. And like the season goes so bad for Sunderland that they get sent down to basically double A, and they were this team with, and it's like a train wreck that you're watching, and the fans, like the Sunderland is like all they have, their football club, and the fans are like, you know, the players could leave, like we're stuck here watching this team, and just like seeing them all interact with the team while the team is just spiraling out of control. It's one that I would definitely recommend to people, and I hope that Netflix puts out another series of it. But closing out the podcast, we've only mentioned this show one time. It took over social media. We're closing out with Tiger King. We're taking a page from the Ringer's playbook with their exit survey, where I will ask you guys questions, and we're just kind of just answering these questions to close it out. So what is your tweet length review of Tiger King, starting with you, Jake?
I don't think I can make it. It doesn't have to be as long as a tweet. I think it's just like exciting train wreck is really that's really how I'd sum it up.
Zach?
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be 280 characters.
But I'll count it after.
Okay, it's just this, like Jake said, a train wreck. You have to watch it. You want to look away, but you can't. It's just, I didn't know that any of these people ever existed, that this was like a real part of America. And so it's just fascinating to see that.
Yeah, mine was going along the same lines as you guys. I can't believe what I'm watching, but at the same time, please give me more.
Exactly. And I think
that kind of sums it up, where you guys, Zach, you just mentioned like a week ago, I kind of got on this train late a week ago. Like I didn't know any of these guys existed. And now I'm like looking up articles, listening to podcasts about them, trying to learn as much as possible. It was really just riveting TV for the 7 episodes, I think it was. But in your guys' opinion, what was the best moment of the series, or a couple moments if you guys have them?
I would say just the complete episode 3. Like it's called The Secret. That's the one where it really dives into Carol Baskin's story. I think that's the best. Like it was the most well-told part of the documentary, but also just like incredibly fascinating. I felt like I was watching like a Dateline or a 2020 or something, learning about that she definitely killed her husband. Like that was my favorite episode.
Yeah, I mean, The Secret is definitely my favorite episode as well. We actually talked about it on our podcast as well. It's about kind of how just like how kind of supremely well done the episode was. It was fascinating. It really was like a true crime documentary. And I think out of all the craziness, I think the most coherent thought that I can kind of gather from it is that Carol definitely killed her husband.
I mean, that's allegedly, that's a dead giveaway. But for me, I would say the best moment of the series was when Joe Exotic was running as a libertarian in the Oklahoma election. Yeah. And he had no idea what a libertarian was. And that, I think, kind of summed up just how crazy this entire show was, where, you know, you get a guy who has a big cat breeder just running an election. And I think it just sums up the madness of the show. But when it comes to the biggest twist that took you by surprise, what were some of your personal favorites? And some of them are kind of dark twists, so it not exactly your personal favorites, but ones that made for the best kind of television.
I think one of the most shocking things is when was when Joe's husband
Travis
when Travis killed himself on in front of Joe's campaign manager, and they got it on the they got his campaign manager's reaction on the CCTV. Mm-hmm. Was just like unbelievable. I was like, oh my God. Because it's like you're watching the craziness of everything that's going on, and you think that like some of it is scripted, and then you realize like the sheer consequences of these people being as bad as they are, and you know what happens when, you know, people that are susceptible to be manipulated are manipulated and kind of fall down, you know, things. And it really is like a shocking moment where you cannot believe it.
Yeah, I would say definitely that one. Like Jake said, it kind of takes the fun out of what we had been watching and makes you realize how real it is. But going back to what you said, Vip, for number two, I mean, I think the biggest twist was just the whole campaign part. That's on the lighter side, definitely. But just when you think things can't get any more ridiculous, like every episode has some sort of twist at the end. And then the fact that he runs for president and then decides, oh no, I can't wait that long, I'm going to run for governor. And then the part where he's like, you hear him say that he's polling third. So the fact that he actually had people voting for him, like, this is, it's just madness.
Now, I have a couple of points that I put down just because this, again, was a show I couldn't get enough. The fact that Carol started out as a big cat breeder, I thought was a big plot twist.
Hypocritical.
The fact that Carol fed her husband to a tiger. The part where the woman at the park, the worker, she gets her arm mauled off by a tiger, and then she chooses to have her arm amputated so she could get back to working.
Crazy.
The one guy who had his legs lost, but then you find out it wasn't from a tiger attack. He just had a zip lining accident. And then I thought another big plot twist that kind of took me by surprise was the studio fire, because, you know, you see, I don't know, like, why Joe Exotic thought it was a good idea to record himself speaking with his lawyer, where his lawyer was like, Joe, you, like, as long as they have the tapes, like, you know what could happen. And then, like, a week later, the tape go on fire in his studio. Like, that part took me for a twist. And the another funny part that I thought was worth mentioning is the feud between Carol Baskins and Joe Exotic, when Joe just ramped it up to the complete petty level with the copying Carol's logo, the big cat.
Oh yeah. And,
I thought that was a good twist that just made me laugh every time, like, they would show, like, you know, their logo or the font that Joe Exotic would use. I thought that was a good moment. So the last question that I will ask you guys is, what were you the most surprised to find out about after watching Tiger King?
I have two things. Number one, we'll see if it actually happens, but in an interview, I think it was with Netflix, from prison after everything aired, Joe Exotic says that he is done with the Carol Baskin saga. No, so we will see. Right. We know that he has 22 years until he's out of prison, but we'll see what happens if he gets out, if that's truly, if he's truly buried the hatchet with her. And then my other one is just, I've loved seeing John's glow up, his first husband. We saw at the end of the episode that he got his tattoo covered up that said sole property of Joe Exotic. But, and we've seen, I don't know if you've seen the pictures on Twitter, that he has some hair now, he wears shirts, he got new dentures. He's, wow. I don't know if he's married or not, but it's the woman that he got pregnant and got and ran off with, that he seems to be living a good life now that he's got that Netflix money in the bank.
And I think for me, the sheriffs of Carol Baskin's County are reopening Don Lewis's case. there's like articles from the Post, Time, New York Times about just them explaining why they're reopening in it. But hopefully some justice is finally served.
Now for me, this is something like I was talking about, like all the things that I learned and reading about. The one that hurt the most for me is that Joe Exotic didn't write or sing any of his country songs. Yeah,
that was crazy.
What?
Yeah, he
didn't know that.
You know that?
Like, I realized as it was happening in the show, I was like, there's no way this is heavily auto-tuned or something, because it definitely does not sound like him. But that's true. It wasn't even him singing.
It's the Clinton Johnson band.
That's devastating, because I saw a tiger is a banger.
I saw towards the end of the series when I was sitting there and I kept hearing him talk. I was like, there's no way this could be him singing these songs. And I think I was listening to the Dan Le Batard show, and there's this guy who's like kind of dedicated the past like 5 years to following around Joe Exotic, even before like Netflix approached it. Mm-hmm. He was like, yeah, they're not, that's not Joe Exotic's pipe singing those tracks.
That's devastating.
Another thing that I read is the election. Joe Exotic, I thought Joe Exotic had gotten 19% of the entire election. It turns out that 19% was only the Libertarian polls, which is kind of, I thought 19% of Oklahoma, I don't even know what their name is, Oklahomans. I thought they were kind of, does anybody know?
I have no idea. Sooners.
Yeah. I thought 19% of Sooners were just out of their mind.
I mean, that's still 19% too high.
It's still. And then the last thing that I saw, which I thought was funny, just worth mentioning, the officer that investigated the fire at Joe Exotic Zoo, the guy that I had mentioned before, who I heard on the Dan Le Batard show, who's done this podcast about Joe Exotic for the past 5 years. He lived at the zoo with Joe Exotic, and he called the police officer responsible for the case to ask him follow-up questions about like what he found. And the next day, Joe Exotic called him angrily, like, who is this? Like, why are you asking about blah 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 about the fires? And the guy was like, oh no, this is Robert Moore, you know, I've lived on the property with you guys. I was just trying to find out more information. He was like, oh, okay. And then he was like, why is the police officer telling you that I'm asking questions? He's like, oh, that's my limo driver.
I think that's a summary of just like how ridiculous this whole thing is.
Absolutely.
I also saw, we haven't talked about Jeff Lowe at all, but I saw that he's on Cameo now, the app where you like record messages to people. I don't know the charge, but I saw one where he was like telling someone like, stay strong, the government will fall, communism will rise again. Like, it was just like, this, we're living in a simulation right now. This is not a real life.
Oh man, Tiger King. If you haven't watched it yet, even hearing all this, if you haven't watched it and you've heard all of us talk about this, it's still something that you have to watch, see for yourself. There's probably things we left out that will make your jaw drop. I saw somebody on Twitter, somebody from The Ringer, Jason Concepcion, where he was like, this is the one show that is, you can't spoil it for people because it just keeps getting more and more ridiculous. But I think that's a good spot to wrap this one up. It was great getting to talk with you guys today, and hope the listeners can take something out of this, all the while still staying safe out there. But I just wanted to thank you guys again.
Thanks a bit. Appreciate the invite.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is
finally here. And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.